to talk about Winter Peak and in Washington, which is a relatively new crop, and would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Kurt Brownwort from ProGene and Howard Nelson from Central Washington Grain Growers, who are actively involved with this crop. Well, this shaded area, this shaded area is what we call the low precipitation region of the PNW. That's less than 12 inches. The low precipitation cropland region. That represents about 3.5 million cropland acres. Pretty good sized chunk of ground. You go to the west here, and then you get into the intermediate area, and then the Palouse region, which I know all of you have heard about, is right down in here. And that gets up to 26 inches of rain. This is where I'm based at Lind. I'm going to be talking about, that's 9.5 inches of rain. I'm going to be talking about a study I have here at Ritzville, 15 miles away, but you pick up 2 inches of precip. It goes from 9.5 up to 11.5 inches of precip. That's just the way it can change so rapidly. And this is a new look for the dry lands of eastern Washington, this winter pea. Well, why would we want to grow this crop? Well, it's first of all, it can come up through 8 inches of soil, which is pretty nice to do because our summer fallow dries out in the dry summers, and it can come up much better than winter wheat, which is, by the way, that's the staple crop. The crop out there is winter wheat, summer fallow. That's what you do, winter wheat, summer fallow. And so it can come up. We're not putting any nitrogen on this crop. It's a nitrogen fixer. It allows a cleanup of downy brome, which is a grass weed, a major grass weed. Of course, it's a weed when we're only growing out there winter wheat, summer fallow. All we're growing is a grass. And the winter in downy brome is a winter annual grass, and so it can be a real problem. So we can put that on, and we have herbicides that we can put on a broadleaf crop to take out the grasses. We can also go back in and plant winter pea after these this beyond soil residual herbicide. And that's used for this clear field wheat. You might have heard of that. There's a lot of clear field wheat going in, again, cleaning up those grass weeds. But if you do that in the dry region, it carries over longer than it says on the label. And so you can't go back. You can't go clear field winter wheat, summer fallow, and then come back in and grow a regular non-clear field wheat. You have to go back into a non-clear field wheat and then not put beyond herbicide on it, basically. Is that right, Drew? He's the weak guy. Anyways, but winter pea will tolerate that. The crop after winter pea tends to do better, and I think that's water-related, maybe some other things. And then this would also encourage farmers to use no-till fallow, which is a biggie out in the dry lands because we have wind erosion is a huge concern. This pea can come up. Don't sweat the evaporation of your seed zone water so much. If it's drier, just plant the peas deeper. They'll come up. So I have two studies at Ritzville, and I'm basically going to talk about one, but I'm going to mention one before at the very end. And so this study that I'm going to talk about was initiated in 2010, and it compares winter wheat, spring wheat, tilled fallow with winter pea, spring wheat, IFSF, summer fallow. This is conservation tillage summer fallow, undercut fallow. So 2-3-year rotations, and we're interested not only in the performance of the winter wheat versus winter pea, but what's the spring wheat going to do afterwards? Both followed by a fallow period. And here are some yield data for the 6 years. And let's start with winter pea, starting with 2011, and you can see them. We did have a one winter kill event for winter pea. That occurred in 2014. The air temperature dropped to minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit for about 4 hours one evening, and that killed off this particular variety of winter pea we had. It did not kill the wheat, so we lost the crop, and we replanted it to a spring pea. And spring peas, you talked about anybody, you know, it didn't do as well. It did 778 pounds. It was a feed pea, by the way, or edible pea. I'll get into that later. But in these other years, we did just fine, including this year. But we do have an average over those years of 2,180 pounds. And anybody who sees these data, who knows how dry it is at Ritzville, this is an 11.5-inch precip zone. That's a lot of peas, and they're doing consistently very well. And so we have farm tours and county tours out there, and the farmers are very interested in this crop. We also have it at our Lynn station. Well, what did it do against winter wheat? Winter wheat is king, and, you know, Ritzville's a nice environment, and we produce some very nice crops of winter wheat. And we're averaging almost 73 bushels of winter wheat. And so that's why they're planting winter wheat, because it's so stable and does so well. But what does spring pea do afterwards? Or spring wheat? And again, we're planting spring wheat after both of these. And I won't go through all of these, but some years we do get a significant increase in spring wheat yield. And overall, we get about a bushel and a half, or, you know, 1.7 bushels more spring wheat than with winter pea than we do with winter wheat. And this is recrop. We just go in and direct seed anything with no tillage on that. Well, what's it doing with soil water? There it is. Well, we measure water in all these plots right after we harvest them in August or late July, and then we measure them first thing. Actually, late winter, right before we're planting spring wheat. We want to know how much water they used and how much is left. And so winter pea uses, on average, this is an average over the 6 years, it uses an average of 1.2 inches less water than winter wheat. Well, that sounds pretty good. And, you know, those differences are highly significant. And if we go out in the spring before we plant wheat, we still have more water in our after winter pea, but that difference has shrunk. And we've lost, we had 1.2 inches of gain, and now we're down to just a half an inch of gain. So we've lost 7/10 of an inch of water. Why is that? Well, I think the answer is because we have hardly any residue with winter pea, and we got lots of residue with winter wheat. We know from experience that a drier our soil is, at least in the PNW, the more water it will infiltrate and store during the winter. So we have a drier soil with more residue with winter wheat, more moisture, and very little residue with winter pea. And so it's not as efficient as storing water during the winter. Nonetheless, and so there's our overwinter gain, 4.3 inches versus 5. Nonetheless, and here's our follow our precipitation storage efficiency during the winter, 69% for winter wheat and 55% for pea. So still ending up with more water in the spring, just not as much as the difference is in the spring as in the fall. Here's what it looks like. This red line is what we measure in a 6-foot profile right after harvest, and this solid circle is pea, and the triangle is winter wheat. And so you see, the big difference happens at about 3 feet, and peas don't root down much more. So here's a big water difference for them with in August. We come out in late March. And look at this, how this line has switched over from the pea being on top here. The wheat actually has a little bit more moisture down here to about 2.5 feet than the pea does. And then the trade-off occurs. So you can just see these basic water dynamics in a sort of a spatial arrangement this way. And so that's pretty much happening. And this pretty much happens each year. Water recharge is different each year, of course, but the relationship stays the same. So, I mentioned we had a winter kill event in 2014, a negative 5 degrees Fahrenheit killed Wyndham. This is what I've been planting. This has been the standard. If anything's been a standard, I guess Wyndham has. This variety did not get killed that year. I didn't have it at my site, but there were several other sites that Howard Nelson had. It made it through negative 5 degrees. So it has a 13% yield increase over Wyndham. It's taller and more upright, which is pretty important when you go out there at harvest time. These are all direct combined, these peas. It's got 22% larger seed. Why is that important? Because we want to get a pea that will enter the human consumption market. Right now, we call them feed peas, which means everything except selling a package of peas in a supermarket, basically. They have to be a certain size, and they don't want to have be mottled. And ARS at WSU is working on that. I think we're going to have a feed or a human consumption pea within probably just a couple years. It's looking really promising. And what does that mean? That means the price will go up for the farmer. That'll be a more valuable pea. And we're saying it has better winter hardiness because it didn't get winter killed that one year at a couple sites where Wyndham did. And Blaze is already available, and that's what I've got in my plots now. So one thing we really have to watch out for with any pulse crop or oilseed crop in the P&W, and I think probably anywhere where you're using any form of tillage, is there's not much residue there. And I've had a couple studies with some oilseed crops, safflower and canola and camelina, and I've used either direct seeded or undercutted them. And even with the best conservation tillage we could use for summer fallow, taking a soil through 14 months of summer fallow with just one undercutting, and that's a non-soil inversion undercutting, and one rod weeding, another non-inversion, we ended up with 2.5 times more wind erosion on that soil versus where we had winter wheat. And my colleague Brenton Sherritt has a wind tunnel that he likes to bring out, and he takes all these dust emission measurements. And so what does that mean if you're a farmer growing a legume or an oil seed? It means don't till the soil. And so what does that mean for a practical option that you have? That means you can go to summer fallow, but it has to be no-till summer fallow. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a wind erosion mess, and Brenton has shown that with a couple studies. Or you can go to a recrop scenario, like I've done in this study. Remember, I'm planting spring wheat, so we're not doing any tillage. We're just direct seeding it right into the spring wheat, so you can do that. Well, spring wheat's not a big money maker. It does some years, doesn't it, but it's not so stable. So I'd say go to, with that in mind, I'll go to my second slide. And that was a thought. Remember I said I had two studies? This is the rationale for the second study, which I started in 2014. And it's all no-till. And it's got other treatments, but I'm just going to talk about these. We have it's got a four-year rotation of winter pea, no-till fallow, winter triticale, no-till fallow, versus winter wheat conservation tillage fallow, which is the standard. Winter pea, we can go in, I'm fully confident we can go into no-till fallow and get a stand of winter pea because it can come up so well. Winter triticale, if we can't plant it early, we can plant it late. I have another study. As a matter of fact, I talked about winter triticale at this community last year. It really shows potential, especially if both from early seeding and late seeding. So if you can't get a stand early in your summer fallow, you don't have the seed zone water, don't sweat it. Just wait and plant it late, and you'll still do fine. So we're testing this rotation in this next rotation. And that might be really important for eastern Washington and other dry regions where we're really trying to cut down and, in this case, eliminate till summer fallow. So that's what I have, Liz.
All right, thank you, Bill. We've got time for a question.